time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Kathy Barker and Amy Hagopian. Kathy Barker is a scientist, author, and consultant, and a member of the Washington Truth in Recruiting and the Military Recruiting Monitor for Garfield High School PTSA. Amy Hagopian is on the faculty at the School of Public Health at the University of Washington in the Department of Global Health. She served on the Seattle School Board in the early 1990s and was the president of the Garfield High School Parent Teacher Association from 2004 to 2006. And we're going to be talking about military recruiters in the public high schools. Kathy and Amy, thank you both for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Hello.
Thank you, Mike.
So you both co-authored a paper that was carried in the American Journal of Public Health titled, Should We End Military Recruiting in High Schools as a Matter of Child Protection and Public Health? Can you talk about that paper and how that came about?
Sure. I'd be glad to. I've had the pleasure of working with my friend Kathy at Garfield High School over the years, where we became familiar with the practices of military recruiters in our public schools. And as the war started, that is the current war against Afghanistan and Iraq, the recruiters were eager to enlist people in the fight. As we know, this is an all-volunteer army. This is not a citizens' army of draftees anymore. The best people to recruit into a silly, stupid war are young people who don't know any better or who feel discouraged about their prospects to do anything else. And so the recruiters are eager to be in the high schools, and they're quite prevalent and aggressive in that setting. So it prompted us to work on the topic. We engaged our PTSA, the Parent Teacher Student Association at Garfield, in looking at the recruiting issue. We had some forums on it, some discussions, and the whole organization ended up taking a stand that there should not be military recruiting in public schools. And after our experience on that, we ended up writing this paper for the journal.
And that initial vote by the PTA got a lot of national, international attention, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. But it wasn't the first stand the PTA took on issues like this. So when I first came to Garfield with my second child, actually, in 2003, we took a stand against the invasion of Iraq in the fall of 2002, right before the spring invasion. And so that laid the groundwork for our concern about the wasting of our young people's lives in this effort. And then in the spring of 2005, we took a stand against military recruiting and received worldwide attention for it. I think that was for a variety of reasons that we could talk about, but the attention was very intense.
One of the things I think is important about this paper is that it takes those experiences and puts a name to it. We're all so used to soldiers in the schools and the military and war that it's become part of the background. And what we name in this paper is that the process of military recruiting, we name that as a form of predatory grooming, which really offends people. But I think when you look at it, as we do in the paper, this is what military recruiting in the high schools is. It's a form of predatory grooming.
So define that. What is predatory grooming?
Predatory grooming is officially, as we have in the paper, a paper by Craven, Brown, and Gilchrist, the process by which a child is befriended by a would-be abuser in an attempt to gain the child's confidence and trust, enabling them to get the child to acquiesce to abusive activity. It is frequently a prerequisite for an abuser to gain access to a child. And this is not always about sex. So this is about anything where the abuser wants something that is contrary to the wishes or the needs of the child. Something like sex, something like sexual trafficking, maybe drugs, or sending somebody to war.
All right. So there are those people who say that to the children first of all, are old enough to make their own decisions and that they have a choice in this. They're not forced to do any of this. So how do you respond to that?
Well, there's two ways. One is it's hard to define what choice is. The adolescent brain is completely different than the adult brain. It develops differently. It's completely differently. Decisions are made differently. So whereas, and now they find, scientists are finding in so many studies that the adolescent brain does not mature until 25. That it's not 12 or the age of reason or 16 or 17 or 18. It's about 25 that the brain thinks like an adult. Before that, as the brain develops from the back to the front, in the end, adults tend to make their decisions with the prefrontal lobe, the CEO of the brain in a way, making logical decisions. Teenagers tend to think with their amygdala, the center of emotions. They think that the center of rage, passion, and emotions. That's how they're making their decisions. And it's not until much, much later that they're able to think things through. And I think where this becomes predatory grooming is we take advantage of that. It's not just, yes, kids have a choice to say yes or no, but this process starts very early. The military is in grammar schools, it's in middle school. It's in high schools all the time. It's in TV commercials. It's in movie theaters. They're getting
video
the message.
Games.
Video games. They're getting this message all of the time. And what we're objecting to here is ending this process in the high schools. Just in the high schools. That's the paper is a pretty simple paper in that of all places where students are, the military should not be in our public high schools recruiting students.
And the way that they are in high schools, I think is pretty invisible to the public and even to parents. So, you know, unless you are actually there to witness it, you really don't know what they are doing. So recruiters have a multi-pronged approach to getting access to children. And the way they do it is, in schools where there are no limits, which is most of the high schools in the United States, they wander the halls and they have flashy toys and giveaways and video games and all sorts of things. They set up tables in the lunchrooms. And of course, the kids who are in the lunchrooms in high school are the kids who are on free and reduced lunch, the poor kids, who are the special targets of recruiters. And they lure them in with friendship, with, you know, let's go running, let's do the climbing wall, let's play this game together, you know, all sorts of befriending that goes on, especially our, the kids who are children of one-parent families. And the message is, you know, it's going to be tough for you to go to college, to get money to go to college. We know that you're going to be a real burden to your mom here. And so, you know, we're going to offer you a way to get money to go to school, and all you have to do is sign up for the military. And there's great things you can do in the military. You know, do you play music? Oh, you could join the military band. Oh, do you like to write? Oh, you could write for the, you know, the press releases and the newspaper. I mean, there is no discussion of, do you like to get shot? Do you like to shoot people? That conversation doesn't occur.
And what students often don't even know, and this is where I think schools and adults are completely complicit in this grooming procedure, what they don't know, for example, these promises made, the military doesn't have to keep, right? In the military contract, which is for 8 years, that most students, most counselors and teachers don't know, it says we do not have to abide by anything we tell you. It actually says in the contract in small print that you have to abide by the promises, but they don't. Anything can be changed despite being promised.
And unlike the other sorts of recruiters in the schools for colleges or for employment, this is something you can't change your mind about. You know, if you decide to go to the University of Washington and it's not for you, you can leave. But if you decide to go into the military and it's not for you, you cannot leave. And so you are asking a child to make a decision about their future that they cannot reverse for a very long time. And that's not an appropriate decision to ask a kid to make.
And we know the outcomes for students. Another big point of the paper is that the outcomes for younger people in the military are much worse than for older adults. For those young recruits, the rate of suicide, of PTSD, of alcoholism and spousal abuse are all much higher for those
Even
who join the military.
Hospitalizations, a very objective measure, much higher for younger people, which is an unexpected finding for a young population.
So is anyone, can any citizen wander the halls in schools? Is it just open to recruiters?
The recruiters are mandated to be in the school. This is another thing that makes them completely different than other recruiters, and which adds to the nature of the complicity, I think, of the school system in this, and that No Child Left Behind Act of 2002 said that the military recruiters have to have access to the students in school and access to their home contact information, or the school could lose federal funding. So right then and there, I mean, military was already in a lot of schools, but now the school could not say no. And there's no other recruiter that has to be in the schools. So this is...
Which is not to say schools can't set limits, as long as the limits apply to all the types of recruiters that are in their buildings. And Seattle has done a pretty good job of setting limits, and I think thanks in large part to parent activists who insisted that the school board set some limits on this. The limits aren't well enforced, but at least they are in writing, and they do represent a model set of containment that schools could use across the country should they choose to. So, for example, in Seattle, recruiters are limited to coming once per semester per branch of the military. So that still leaves a lot of visitation, given how many branches of the military there are. They are also supposed to not draw children out of the classrooms that they're supposed to be in class to discuss a recruiting opportunity. Again, this is an area where there are many violations. It still goes on. And they're supposed to make appointments in advance for their recruiting activity. Again, largely violated, but at least that's the rule. One of the reasons it's largely violated now is that Seattle Public Schools was forced to retire, lay off, fire all of the career counselors in all the high schools as a budget-saving move. So, you know, this is sort of the cycle of military spending coming to roost in this very continuous way. We spend all our money on the military, so we have no funding for schools, so we lay off the career counselors, so now the military has even freer access to our public schools.
Did the career counselors previously act as filters?
They were the gatekeepers. Right. So previously, the career counselors in Seattle anyway, other countries sometimes have the athletic director or one of the coaches be the military contact point. But in Seattle, it was the career specialists. And now it's really difficult. With no career specialists, it's hard for us to know what's going on in the school. Those were the people that would contact the counter-military recruiters, because one of the important things we won in the change in policy in Seattle was that people who could counsel alternatives to the military or help teach students how to read a military contract would be contacted by the career specialist when the military was coming in to sit side by side, which is in the policy, and be able to counter anything falsely said or to answer any questions. Now there's nobody to call the people to bring them into the schools, but the military's still coming.
And just to be clear, I think the budgets of military recruiters are basically limitless. And whereas the counter-recruiters and the people trying to offer kids a saner voice and alternatives to military service to gain access to college education, they are all volunteers. The recruiters are all paid, and they have a limitless budget for the giveaway toys they offer, for the trucks they pull up and the helicopters they land in the school fields, and just the amazing, dazzling way that they appear in our schools.
And when you say in our schools, do they also, I heard you previously say that they get access to students' contact information. So are they approaching them off campus, and are you okay with that?
Yes, they are approaching them off campus, and I'm not okay with that. Although, I mean, we are trying to at least get it out of the high schools. But they are approaching them everywhere. So, for example, in Seattle, when the yellow buses stopped running because they used to hang around the bus stops where the kids were getting on the yellow buses, the military started riding the metro buses with the students. Every time we find a hole, the military finds a way to break. Every time we plug a hole, they find a way to unplug
so
the hole and get in.
That's another example of cutbacks in school funding that have benefited the military.
Yeah.
So we no longer offer transportation to school for kids in high school. They're now forced to take Metrobus, which doesn't offer direct routes from their homes to schools, so they're transferring early in the morning. And the recruiters have figured, well, here's a great way to get access. They go ride those buses at the times when the kids are getting on and off the buses and sit next to them and tell them how great the military is.
And they come to homes. They use that contact information to send information, to call. And it's really interesting because you could find on the Department of Defense websites those conversations that you have in trying to gain access to students. When a student demurs and says he doesn't want to do it, now you say this, and then you talk about, say, helping your mother or honoring your country and just keep the student moving along. And this can be really persuasive. Maybe not on telephone, but they come to houses. They show up at community centers. I think we've spoken of this before.
And the malls.
We found out they were coming and being invited by Seattle Parks to community events where people were sending their kids during spring break as a place to go when the schools were shut down. The military was there with climbing walls, and they need a signature for you to be able to do the climbing wall. Then they have a contact point. So even though one of the important things about No Child Left Behind is that in the law is that a parent or a student can opt out of having their name sent to the military. Well, first of all, schools do a very bad job of letting parents know and letting students know they have the right to opt out of that. Secondly, there's a million ways they get students' names. There's also a marketing database. So if a student gets a license, driver's license, SATs, all of these are hooked up to contact information which the military uses and then comes and knocks on your door. By the way, this is very one student at Franklin told me once how terrifying it was for her when a guy came to the door in full uniform. Mother didn't speak English, and here's a man at the door saying, you've got to join the military. And she didn't know she could say no. People don't know what you can say, especially if you don't come from the country. And she's saying, but I think I need braces. I'd be trying to think of whatever she could. And the guy said, that's okay. We could fix that. That's okay. We can give you money. That's okay. We could do this. It's very hard for some people to say no, especially in such economically tough times. It's very hard for people to say no.
So the recruiters are clearly salespeople for the military, and they are not required to tell you about any of the downsides of the product, sounds like.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. And actually, one of the more interesting things to read are the military recruiting handbooks, which are available on the web. You can go find them. And they give very clear instructions on how to insinuate yourself into a public school. We put this actually in our paper because it's really so interesting. So let me just read this to you from the handbook. It says, they give wide-ranging advice to the personnel seeking to enlist high school students. The manual declares, quote, recruiters, like infantrymen, must move, shoot, and communicate. So this is speaking to the recruiter. The objective of the school recruiting program is to assist recruiters with programs and services so they can effectively penetrate the school market. There are various ways for recruiters to insinuate themselves into the school community. So, for example, the manual says, be so helpful and so much a part of the school scene that you are in constant demand. Attend athletic events at the high school. Deliver donuts and coffee for the faculty once a month. Offer to be a timekeeper at the football games. And then I think in a particularly cynical gesture, given Martin Luther King's views on this, they recommend that the recruiters show up on Martin Luther King Day when the assemblies are held in their full dress regalia and participate in school events commemorating the holiday, as if the military's objectives were in line with Martin Luther King's points of view.
So talk a bit about the other programs that the military uses for enticing people below 18 into their programs, for instance, JROTC?
Yes, there's Junior ROTC, which has, I think, right now about 500,000 students enlisted. And
nationwide.
Nationwide. Mm-hmm. And this is pretty scary. This is not considered recruiting and doesn't fall under any of the recruiting rules under the optional child or the optional protocol of child that we can talk about. So, but yet something like 50% of junior ROTC people do go on to the military. So schools buy into the junior ROTC because they think they're getting kind of a cheap deal. The military is going to pay for this.
Again, school cutbacks.
Right.
Benefiting the military.
But it's not true.
They're trying to fill their day with programming without paying teachers.
But it turns out they actually have to pay. And not only do they pay with many hidden costs, the district has to pay the school. They get teachers that haven't even gone through teacher school. They have to hire retired military or military as dictated. They're teaching history from a militaristic point of view. In San Diego, they did at least get the junior ROTC to stop having guns in the school. So people are rising up in some kinds of ways. Some schools are making it obligatory to join junior ROTC, making it a gym class or something like that and signing people up. So there's also a Future Soldiers program, where every branch of the military has a way to get kids in there before the age of 17. So 17 is when you can enlist with a parent's permission. But they start working on them earlier, and with parents' permission, you can become part of Future Soldiers, maybe go to boot camp in the summer, maybe get money. Not only that, students in schools get money if they get another student to sign up for Future Soldiers. So they get a bonus for signing people up for that as well. So this is another program in the schools. And there's a couple of these kind of junior ROTC programs. We also have overt military schools. We've got one in the Kitsap where you have a public school, kind of a charter school, being run by the military. Chicago now has six of them, military charter schools, public schools. One of my particular favorite is the ASVAB test, the Armed Forces Vocational Aptitude Battery, which is given at schools as a career test, help you decide where you want to go.
Vocational counseling.
Yes, and if you look at the website, you see nothing about the military. Well, it's a Department of Defense test, and it's a test they use to place people in the military. So they give this to at schools, and over half the schools do this. But most of them don't know it's military and have the name sent to the military now for contacts and get the results sent to the military, and they use that to also try to talk kids into going to the military. So 90% in Washington take this test without choosing the privacy option. There is an option to take the test and not have your name sent to the military, but most schools don't let people know that they have the choice to do that. But here again, we have good news because the Maryland legislature recently put a law in saying that you could not do that. You could not send kids taking the ASVAB test without letting them opt out of having their information sent to the military. So there are good things happening. I think districts and parents and students and activists are slowly understanding the encroachment that the military is making in the educational system.
You know, I think the absence of a draft is something that sort of underscores all of this. And the reliance on an all-volunteer army is just something that the military and the people who want us to be at war clearly embrace fully. They do not want us to have a draft, because if there was a draft, regular, ordinary, middle-class kids would be called up to serve in these ridiculous fool's errands that we're on around the world, and the public would say, no, we're not going to send our kids to those fool's errands. But as long as we can call this a volunteer effort, we don't really have to engage the public in a full debate about what wars we should fight and which ones we shouldn't. And in the absence of that debate, we can just draft poor kids, kids of single-parent families, kids who don't envision themselves as having other alternatives, into these efforts. And no one objects.
So how do you respond to the people that say that served in the military, voluntarily signed up, and say it was the best thing that ever happened to them? The bulk of people serving the military don't see combat. You know, you guys are just completely stretching this.
Everyone in the military is trained to kill, And I think the book on John Krakauer's book on Pat Tillman was really illuminating, to see Pat Tillman, who wanted to join the military and was very psyched to do it. How completely shocked was it boot camp? Just at the way boot camp tries to take apart your psyche and rebuild it as a killing machine.
John Tillman isn't telling us how great it was to go into the military, is he?
Yeah, because he's dead and it was hidden. So it's.
You know, there's plenty of people who do make that argument, but the people we don't hear from are the ones who are dead or who are lying in hospital beds at Walter Reed, or who are in jail because they have engaged in spouse abuse, or the homeless people down in Nicholsville and Tent City, who, you know, the bulk of whom are, veterans. Actually, the homeless encampment in Nicholsville in Seattle is run by Veterans Against Veterans for Peace. I mean, that's not coincidental. Military service is associated with many, many bad outcomes, not just for youngest people, but for everybody. And yes, there are probably some people who feel that they had a good experience and that it was better than some alternatives for them. But I think as a whole, as a public policy, that we should engage in these ridiculous wars and recruit people to enter the military where we teach them how to kill people and send them off to do that, this is not a good way to run a world.
I think a lot of people do join the military, particularly young people, from a desire to help. I really do. I think there's a lot of people that join, and they want to be the people rescuing people from tsunamis and building up after floods, after Katrina, but that's not what's happening to them. They aren't being sent there. They're being sent to fight these wars that are breaking their hearts and minds. And I think there's also another side of it. Not only do you yourself, in engaging in wars, get PTSD and become injured and huge brain traumatic injuries, it hurts to kill somebody. People don't come back easily from killing other human beings. They don't want to kill other human beings. And this is something that they don't easily get over, ever.
Even the people doing drone attacks from their computers are getting PTSD. They know what they're doing. They're killing people remotely without ever looking them in the eye.
Only a couple minutes left. So what was, when this paper came out, what was the response from the media?
It depends on what you mean by the media. Corporate media. Corporate media wasn't as interested. What was very interested, who was interested was right-wing. I think the right-wing was very interested because they mistook or misrepresented what we said. What they translated our paper into was that military recruiters are sexual predators. That was the single line. We're not saying that. What we're saying is that the process of military recruiting is like sexual predation, and that there is a form of grooming involved, a desensitization to difficult issues, a gaining of trust, penetration in the school, getting to know the parents and the trusted advisors of the students. We're not pointing to individual military recruiters, but to the process. And so, but that's not what people wanted to hear. And I would say that The two main issues were that we were saying the recruiters are predators and that the university is a horrible liberal place that shouldn't exist because it's turning out people in thoughts like this.
But you make a good point that the media response to our paper was much more muted than the response in 2005 to when the PTA took a stand against recruiting in the schools. And I think it's not quite clear to me why mainstream media didn't pick up on this at all, but they really did not. And it was right-wing talk radio that wanted to use it as a platform for haranguing liberal views on the war. And that was pretty much it, and it blew over fairly quickly.
I think we're all pretty tired. I think people don't want to hear about the war anymore. Mm-hmm. They really don't. And I think the election of Obama has really hurt our military recruiting efforts. Because where people were really happy to object to George Bush's wars and to George Bush recruiting students in schools, they don't object so much to Obama's wars.
All right. How can people find out more about these issues if they want to locate the paper?
I would say to go to Washington Truth and Recruiting, www.watir.org. for and that could connect you to issues across the country, not only just in Washington. There's a large, vibrant movement across the country of people trying to counter militarism in the schools, and anybody can do something. Parents,
and parents
teachers.
Should be much more aware of this than they are and get involved with their PTAs to monitor the recruiting in their schools.
Very good. Well, with that, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, thanks, Mike.